Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Just another manic Monday, ladies and gents. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Big result for Brucey, and Tuchel got his first win. It's Monday, 1st of February. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushina Hantaraja.
Well, 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 ladies and gentlemen, good to have you back with us. It's Monday, yeah. Then it's Tuesday, Wednesday, what? Doesn't work in the same way, does it, quite frankly? But we hope you're having a marvellous Monday, and no doubt you are now. You're joined with Jimmy and Vichy. Jimmy, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. I'm all right. I'm just, yeah, I'm just happy to be here.
Damn right
after another glorious weekend of some all right football.
Vish, were you... I think we're all pleased to get Arsenal and Manchester United out of the way. We didn't need that. But Vish, are you more intrigued by some happenings that happened in the Netherlands? Did you see Den Bosch? They were 3-0 down. Then their man came and he literally came and he put four away. They drew 4-4. The man's name was Jiz.
He didn't literally come. Let's get that straight.
Well, Jiz Hornkamp scored 4 goals for Den Bosch. So the game drew 4. What a finish, Jim.
Quite. Yes, quite.
Ruining it was, a clean sheet.
Yeah.
See, Jim, you can learn from that.
Yeah, very much so. Very good. Very good.
You've not got anything to say on this.
It sounds like it means spaff. What more do you want?
Jiz Hornkamp game into the Jiz Premier Hornkamp. League.
But that's the thing, he's taken it too far. Like, we can't say anything about that. His parents have thought, right, his surname's going to be Hornkamp. It's like, right, people can take the piss out of that. Let's just run with it.
Yeah.
Jiz.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
Hornkamp.
Just one of those names is good enough.
In a way, he's probably invincible. It's just impossible to get a rise out of the guy.
Yeah.
It's called Jiz Hornkamp. He's had it all his life.
Yeah, that's true.
That's probably why he's so sort of ice cold in front of goal.
Yeah, you don't want to rub him the wrong way, do you?
Because give him one. Very enjoyable. We could get bogged down there, ladies and gentlemen. So the wise thing would be to do is to move on. And let's talk about something else that got us all terribly excited. It was Everton 0, Newcastle United 2. Well, it certainly got Amanda Staveley's husband excited because he tweeted, just simply, get in! 3 exclamation marks. And some of the comments were brilliant. It was all, oh, really glad you're keeping up with Newcastle. Oh, this really excites us because you might come in with a takeover. Like, it's the hope that kills you, people. Ashley's still in charge.
Yes, yes, he is. I mean, he still wants to sell up, doesn't he? But I think it's, you know, it's not really his... It's not really... A man tweeting about it isn't going to change anything at the moment, is it?
I mean, does it suggest, though, that, that Stavely is camp, they're all diehard Newcastle United fans still, Vish?
Well, no, because they went to try and put another bid on another club, didn't they? They're not quite diehard. Why are Newcastle fans kind of persisting with this? Jump on Reddit, yeah. A lot of people with money over there, and them to buy your club.
Yeah.
In fact, if there is a... I don't know of a more Reddit football club than Newcastle United. I think
absolutely.
They should run with it. I'll run with it.
Completely.
Yeah. Well, going back to what happened on the pitch, it was a great win for Newcastle. I mean, we've sort of flip-flopped about with this, Jim. But have we finally landed on the fact that it is time to admit that Steve Bruce is doing an all right job?
Marcus, I would be absolutely shocked if there aren't a lot of people around Newcastle right this moment with their bed sheets painting on phrases like, "Jeez, you're doing a great job." Just words of encouragement. Things like, "You're doing a great job." You know, "Thank you, Steve." Uh-huh. "Never go anywhere, Brucey."
Mm-hmm. Well, Bruce said in the post-match interview, "If you saw the dressing room, you would think we'd just won the European Cup."
Why is that a good thing? Isn't that something they say when someone gets a result that they shouldn't have done?
Yeah.
You know, they say, like, when a team's winning and someone gets a last-minute equaliser, like, "Oh, look how they're over-celebrating in there." You can't say that about your own players.
No, it's like if it's sort of a non-league side, you know, get a last-minute equaliser and it forces a replay in the third round against a bigger side. It's like, we've just won the European Cup. And you sort of go, yeah, I can imagine it is, because this may well be the peak moment for some of those players' careers. Mm. Whereas a win away at Everton, who are not particularly in great form, yeah. I don't know, Jim.
It's almost like, look at them getting carried away from themselves. They're not going to know what hits them next week. They're going to be such a state.
They can't believe they've won a game. Because they are losers. That's the thing you don't understand. Fundamentally, these guys are losers. And they've won. They can't believe it.
There's a lad called Jizz in Holland. He scored twice as many goals as this lot. Can't believe their luck.
Oh, dearie me, yeah.
I mean, what a difference, like, joking aside, though, what a difference Callum Wilson makes. You know, that is, I mean, he was annoyed with himself for not getting a hat-trick after the game, and he had a couple of other chances that he might have done better with that weren't exactly, you know, gilt-edged. But still, like, you got to give some credit where it's due. That was a canny bit of business. And if they stay in the Premier League, a lot of it's going to be down to him.
Well, you forget that he is actually a quality centre-forward. I mean, they don't create many chances, but...
You got the impression he could believe that they won.
Yes. I mean, he does have a UEFA Nations League bronze medal, Vish. We can forget this.
Yeah, I'm almost annoyed that you reminded me, actually. But it was
achievement.
Yeah, I suppose it is in a way. Yeah, I mean, he does have it, but yeah, he's one of those strikers who doesn't seem to be perturbed by what goes on around him, because you think, because Newcastle creates so little, that he might snatch at a few here and there because he'd worry that maybe that it'll be a while till the next one comes around. But he's just so calm. And the another player who I've always been quite fond of, but he not necessarily put in the performances, is Almiron, because he's such a willing runner, and you can tell there is something there. I reckon if he's playing in a team like Leicester City, for example, I reckon we're talking about a very different player. And sometimes it looks like he runs a bit too fast for his own body. He's like a child running downhill in slippers. You're like, "You're gonna hurt yourself. Just like slow it down a little bit." But yeah, I mean, they definitely profited off quite a listless Everton performance. I think, you know, whilst, you know, Spurs are currently going through their own little thing at the moment, but in terms of what the adjective Spursy means, I think it should be applied to Everton. I know every set of supporters has this opinion of their team that the highs shouldn't be taken too seriously and the lows are just what you expect. But I think Everton, you know, best encapsulate that mindset right now.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, with Ancelotti there, you think, oh, hang on, can they push on, you know, with some of the players they have? I mean, Newcastle did a bit of a hatchet job on James Rodriguez, which is disappointing from the neutral to see. But of course, you say hatchet job, not like it used to be, you know, with VAR and sort of modern refereeing and so on. But going back to Ancelotti, you know, he wasn't very happy. He said afterwards, "I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed." He actually said that.
Oh, no. I feel like I need to up my standards just hearing that from Ancelotti.
I might clean my room, actually.
Yeah, you should do. But he called the players lazy as well, which is... I mean, interesting tactic. We've seen what happened with Lampard recently when he was calling out the players, although Ancelotti is obviously a lot longer in the tooth and his man management is meant to be pretty good. But I know what you're saying there, Vish, about Everton. They don't want to just sort of sleepwalk their way to another kind of just a mediocre top half finish, you know, which, again, finishing in the top half is an achievement in the Premier League, don't get me wrong. But for Everton, especially the way they started the season, they'd want to be at least pushing maybe for Europa League, especially in this bit of a basket case of a season.
But they've been in this situation, sorry to cut in, but they've been in this situation for years and years now, haven't they? Just seems like they are in this sort of limbo of their own, made of their own ambitions.
Sure, but it felt though this season that actually was they were going to push on through and break through that.
But that's what I mean, though. The danger is that they then won't.
Well, the reality is that they might not as well, of course. But back at Newcastle, you know, again, a great 3 points. I mean, before the game, Steve Bruce said that I could bring you a pile of letters I signed only yesterday. People wishing me good luck, telling me to keep bashing away. Now, I don't know whether he's going back to Jizz Horncamp or not, but I think I did find it interesting that he was very sort of I don't know, he was fairly upbeat and he seemed to be fairly encouraged. And after that win, Vish, I don't know. Could we see an upturn in fortunes for Newcastle, or is this just a complete one-off, do you think?
Well, I mean, just to go back to those letters, you know, in prison sometimes when inmates don't receive letters, so they write them fake ones.
Do you think that's
or it? they hold some back and then they kind of drip it through slowly. Do you think that's what they were?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why does this one say Sheffield Wednesday? Nothing. Leave it. Read it.
I like bashing away as well. It does suggest that there's some sort of like kind of, I don't know, Steve Bruce slash fiction that's being sent to the club.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know he likes to write a novel.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. But just to answer your question seriously, even if only for a moment.
Please.
You know, we talk a lot about Bruce being quite likable, and we obviously know that only goes so far. I just don't know. I don't know how, given what we've said about Everton, how seriously can you take that kind of performance against them? So, I mean, for his like personal sake, I hope it is. But for Newcastle, I don't really think so. And I felt that it was quite interesting that a lot of credit was going to Graham Jones rather than him. It felt a bit like, you know, here's the new stepdad. He's really cool. He lets me eat ice cream after 8 p.m. You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that when all said and done, it was a great win for Newcastle and much needed because they were slowly sort of sinking towards relegation. Now, fortunately for Newcastle and the other sides around there, the sides in the relegation zone can't buy a win, and that was seen very much when West Brom played Fulham. Nice to have it on the BBC, by the way. Dion Dublin commentating. He's full of the joys, isn't he? Old Dublin. He absolutely
it's great.
Loves it.
It's also nice that they've been kind of, you know, rolled what could appear to be a little bit of a turkey of a game with the fixtures there. But actually, it really, really delivered.
Yeah, even though the BBC write-up, the opening paragraph was, well, I mean, it's not the most glamorous of ties, considering. I'm like, well, hang on, it's better than the bowls of what you normally have on at this time on Saturday afternoon. You know? But it was a decent game. I mean, from a Fulham point of view, I thought to myself, as they kind of trudged off the pitch, 1-0 up at half-time, I thought, that's not enough. You know it's not enough. You've had chances and possession to put it 2-0. Big Sam Allardyce, or Darth Allardyce, as he was looking, will think to himself, right, we've got away with that. He'll get them in the dressing room and he will tell them to do exactly what Fulham did to West Brom in that first half. Right, you know how they've been closing us down and playing on the front foot and not playing too deep? Let's just do that to them because that would probably work. And it was right, Vish. That did seem to work, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, beyond knowing you, I have no real allegiance to Fulham. But even I felt anxious when they only went in at 1-0 because they were playing so well and they were tearing West Brom to shreds. And I suppose it's the reason why they are where they are, in that they came out and they suddenly looked a different team. But they definitely didn't deserve to lose that game, I don't think. And for all kind of Allardyce's tweaks at half time, I still think Fulham had enough to play better than they did in the second half. And when they went, to be fair, when they went 2-1 down, I think, right, you're definitely going to lose this because this is how football works. And luckily they didn't.
Yeah.
That was great. That was Beckham-esque from Harrison Reed.
Oh, it was, as soon as he put that ball in, I thought, goal. That's how good it was, because you got Mitrovic, who was in the box, and obviously Cavallero, you know, the horseman bringing up the rear, and you know, scored a great header against Spurs, obviously, and it was that kind of cross, as I say. It's pretty much his goal in a sense. But going on what you said about, you know, Allardyce making tweaks. I mean, Jim Allardyce said West Brom played too much complex football in the first 45 minutes.
Yeah, and of course.
We kept in that they kept giving the ball back to Fulham instead of to their own players. I mean, there's nothing too complex about that, is there?
Well, you say that, but people mock Allardyce for, you know, for being perhaps like too simplistic, or the fact that you know what you're going to get with him. Call it Brexit ball, call it meat and two veg, whatever.
Hang on, Brexit ball? Where's that come from?
Yeah, that's a mate of mine calls it Brexit ball.
Brexit ball? That's not... That's a bit...
Well, you know, I've seen other people say it as well. But, you know, he's talking about...
keeping it simple.
Yeah, and by Diagne, who they brought in, and the words he used were, at halftime, we said, we've brought a big man from Galatasaray. I want you to play off him, off his feet or chest. And there is actually a sort of genius, almost, to quote Pep, about the simplicity that Allardyce brings in. Because they are really simple, straightforward instructions. If that's a little insight into how he plays. It's not like, it is literally, yeah, there's a big guy there, get it to him. Try not to get to his head, feet or chest. That's it. Like, really, really, really straightforward. They know what they're doing. They know their jobs. And, you know, when they execute it properly, it works. And there's a lot to be said for that, because, you know, when Allardyce does what he does, teams stay up. But do you think they'll be a little bit disappointed not to put Fulham away? Because you have to win that. I felt that there's a weird situation in the first half, Mark. I don't know if you agree with this, but I felt like when De Cordova-Reed hit the post after he'd scored, I think that would have made them more nervous than if they hadn't even had that chance.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because it makes you think, like, oh, that was a chance to go 2-0 up.
Yeah.
And we've blown that.
Yeah, I think so. I think Gary Lineker in the studio is saying that it's a tricky one for Fulham when you're getting at half-time, because what do you say? It's kind of like, well, more of the same. And Allardyce's job, you know, that sort of cliched thing, well, his half-time talk is a bit easy because, as you say, do the basics, you know, actually play more on the front foot and so on and so forth. I mean, the two Fulham goals showed the little bit of quality they've got, I think. Whereas the West Brom goals, don't want to do them a disservice, but there was slight... Well, maybe I am doing them a disservice there.
Striker's finish from Kyle Bartley.
I was about to say, it was a lovely finish. I mean, yeah, so no, fair play. But, the man from Galatasaray did make a difference when he came on.
Can that be his name? Like, just for the rest of the season, the man from Galatasaray.
The big man from Galatasaray. As if they've produced him in some sort of lab or something.
Yeah, he's not on loan, is he?
One of those Galatasaray guys, you know? We paid good money for that.
I like the, not just the simplicity, but I like the visual of his chest and feet, because I have this image of Allardyce, like, holding his shoulder and being, hit him here and here, nowhere else.
Yeah. That tactic worked for Sunderland when they used to play with Niall Quinn up top. It was fizz the ball into Quinn between shoulder and knee, because his chest control, and some people might struggle with that because I think obviously he's quite a big guy. But as you say, Jim, he plays to the basics. You know, I forget the two touch players. Was it Patrick Van Aanholt and one other one?
Yeah.
They were in his car or one of the cars and doing it like his YouTube channel. He was saying, you know, you do all these basic things under Allardyce, but it works. And sometimes it's the reason why Allardyce has got so many teams out of a relegation scrap and got them to mid-table in the Premier League. And the reason why he would never manage a side who would have realistic title ambitions. Those tactics get you so far. And don't get me wrong, a lot of teams want to get that far. But of course, your big sides, that's very much... you know, in the opposite direction to where they want to go. A side like Liverpool, for example, Jim, who look like they're back, quite frankly.
Yeah, again.
they just won't go away, the champions.
No, they were excellent, weren't they? Vish, I know you were at the game. The first half, I watched the game, yet I had the impression that it wasn't actually happening.
Yeah.
Nothing much of note happened.
I think on Match of the Day, they just sort of went, yeah, let's just go straight on to the second half.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did feel like the, you know, when you used to get DVDs and you'd have adverts for other DVDs, including like an advert not to steal DVDs.
Yeah.
And you'd try to fast forward through it. That was basically what it was like that first half. West Ham were actually pretty good. They kind of set off Liverpool and at the same time, you know, played some very good football. They definitely had the best chances of that first half. And then Klopp, I'm jumping on Klopp's words here rather than saying I saw it, but in the second half he said he went for more directness, and he kind of
see,
but they didn't have a big man from Galatasaray, did they? They only had a little man from Bayern Munich in Zerdan Shaqiri, who he moved over to the left, and that second goal, which was staggeringly good. And I don't think the TV cameras did Shaqiri's pass justice, because I swear to you, I was up quite high in the West Ham Stadium, and that ball went very, very high indeed. And it had to you know, bypass the defenders, but the dip as well to land on Salah's foot.
Well, the touch.
Yeah, okay, you know, take the touch and take the finish as well, both excellent. But I think the pass is one of a kind, because he's got no right to play it first time. It's just, fundamentally, it's a bad decision. Even Klopp said afterwards, he played it too early, but he played it perfectly. It was... staggering.
Well, I think for it to land in that position from where he hit it is like, you could give me 1,000 goes at that, and I'd probably end up breaking my leg before I did that.
Well, but the pass out to him, was it from Alexander Arnold, was a lovely one. It was just it was a perfect breakaway goal. It was just a few touches and it was in the back of the net. But I mean, I would like to mention that Salah touch and finish, because I mean that was like Bergkamp-esque, Jim. It was absolutely glorious.
It's, I mean, because you're still reeling from how good the first touch was before you've even noticed he's taken the second.
It just touches it past the keeper.
Yeah, because it's all one motion, isn't it?
Yeah.
In a sense, it feels it's one action, despite there being two. Perhaps, was there three touches? Did he touch it twice with his right foot? Doesn't matter.
No, two.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. Just, he's such a silky player. He's so good to watch. And when he's firing like that, it is going to be enough to bring you through when you're missing Firmino and Mane as well. Mm. Like there was a lot of talk about that before the game, as if Liverpool were, you know, perhaps on, you know, maybe too short, and did they have enough with just Salah? It's like, think about that,
Jim. Your mate,
that's mad.
Jim, your mate Jamie Redknapp reckoned that Mo Salah is slightly underappreciated in the Premier League.
Do you think?
That's what Jamie Redknapp said.
Do you think there's perhaps this idea that they are just that front three, though, and so all three of them are perhaps a little bit underappreciated because they seem to come as a trio? This is a great example of it. If two of them aren't there, whatever individual is still there is still an exceptional player that's going to win you games.
Well, I mean, as he proved, because Mane and it was Fabinho wasn't there, but Mane wasn't playing. But I think I think that if anything, Mane and Firmino are underappreciated rather than Salah. I think Salah is very appreciated.
Yeah, Salah's the one that picks up the golden boots. You know, he's always the one that's talked about. He's got probably the biggest fan base out of the three of them as well, in terms of see how their interactions are on Twitter and stuff like that, and kind of numbers they do. So, I mean, I wonder if it's just, we've gone so high with praising Salah, we can only go down. So he's like, let's try and loop our way back the other way and say that he's underappreciated
But it could also be that if you're an ex-Liverpool player, Liverpool cannot be praised enough.
Very true. Vish, what do you reckon of Liverpool? They, at the time of recording, it's not completely signed, sealed and delivered, but we're very, very close to that. Bringing in Preston's Ben Davis to bolster that defence, because of course you had Jordan Henderson at the back in a little bit of a makeshift defence, who again did very, very well, but they've brought him in. He only had 6 months left on his contract and he's classified as a homegrown player. I mean, I don't know whether this is something to, maybe it wasn't a consideration, but it's an added bonus that he is already based in the northwest of England as well, so they've got him in by the looks of it, because today is deadline day, of course. Must be lovely for Ben Davis, who not that long ago, I think, was playing for Fleetwood Town or something like that, and now he's about to join Liverpool.
Yeah, apparently there are a couple of other Premier League clubs looking at him. I don't know
who
exactly.
Celtic as well.
Celtic, okay, I mean, they just need bodies, don't they? Nat Phillips has done a decent job. I don't think he's quite good enough for this level yet, and I wonder if actually he's one of those players they probably offload in a couple of years. It's a lovely little treat. The way you said that he was in the northwest, I mean, it's probably a very, very real thing to be wary of. But yeah, I wonder if it's like, okay, so what are they? Is he like in their support bubble now? Like, how does this work? They can go for walks
together. He's there anyway.
Yeah.
They were looking at other players, but all things considered, because Ben Davies, as you say, other clubs have been interested in him, not clubs the size of Liverpool, but still there's interest in him. He's quite clearly a good player. But Shodran Mustafi was one that they were looking at. Jimmy, you gutted that didn't happen.
I am gutted. I bought into that. I was really hoping it was going to happen, because then we'd have pictures of Mustafi winning, lifting the World Cup and potentially the Premier League as well, and I would be delighted for him to have pulled that off in a weird way. Yeah, I was hoping it would happen. I would like to see how he would fit into such a good team and see if such a good team could absorb his Mustafinings. But it's not to be, is it?
Sadly,
I don't know if he'll go anywhere.
Sadly not to be. Well, a good win for Liverpool nonetheless. Did you see that David Gold tweeted at 10 p.m. after the game? Sadly, West Ham lost to Liverpool 3-1, but Tottenham lost to lowly Brighton 1-0, so we remain fifth in the league, DG.
Yeah. The response from West Ham fans has been amazing about how it's embarrassing and it's, you know, it's beneath, you know, a Premier League club, and also how it's really disrespectful to Brighton. It's like, I think that's fair enough, actually. And that's really surprisingly measured.
Certainly is. Right, time for a break, DG.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
This week at Sukarnov.
Over at Self Care Club, wellness road tested, Lauren and Nicole discussed intuitive eating and rebelling against diet culture.
Actually, I'm really proud of myself that I did that, because it was hard and it was bloody brave to actually stand up and say, you know what, I choose my life, I choose to have quality of life, I choose to be 2 dress sizes bigger and much fucking happier for it.
For even more great content, there's also a brand new episode of Between the Lines with Melissa Reddy, who sat down with Borussia Mönchengladbach's assistant manager, René Maric. He talked through his journey from a football blogger to coaching one of the most exciting football teams in Europe.
You always focus on the next game and you focus on every opponent, no matter which competition and the level of the opposition. You always focus on each opposition the same in terms of investment of time and resources.
All that and a whole lot more. At Sukarnov.
Sukarnov. Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Now, let's see how we got on in Betway's 4-to-score this weekend. Entry to Betway's 4-to-score is free each week. Just need to pick the first goal scorer in Betway's 4 selected matches for your chance to win the weekly £50,000 jackpot. Make sure your selections are submitted before the first game. Further T's and C's apply. In game 1, it was Southampton versus Aston Villa on Saturday night. I picked Che Adams as first goal scorer. It was Ross Barkley. Wrong. Game 2, Leicester City versus Leeds on Sunday afternoon. Vish, you picked James Maddison. It was Harvey Barnes. Wrong. Game 3, West Ham versus Liverpool Sunday afternoon as well. Jim, you picked Jared Bowen. It was Mo Salah. Wrong. Game 4, Brighton versus Spurs, of course, ended 1-0 to Brighton on the Sunday evening. Luke picked Carlos Vinicius. It was, of course, Leandro Trossard. Wrong. We'll be back with another round of Betway's 4 to score on the preview show this Friday. It's difficult, isn't it? 4 wrong picks.
Why do we hate charity so much?
I have no idea, Vish.
I don't know. We're just bad people.
Yeah.
Well, it's time for emails.
Right, so I got an email from a Glenn Harvey, and Glenn says, your recent chat about grounds out of swimming pools reminded me of something I saw recently while watching the cricket here in Australia. I promise I didn't send this in. The Gabba in Brisbane has a swimming pool inside the stadium where people can wade around with a drink in hand while watching the game. Every now and again, the camera shows people having a good time between balls, and one such occasion when the camera, don't laugh at balls,
Jizz Horncamp.
It's the level that you've been reduced to by Jizz Horncamp, is it, Marcus?
No, Glenn Harvey has written that with a little wink and a smile. He's sort of crafted a little bit of a gag there, and I think it deserves a little bit of applause.
I don't know that he has.
It deserves big applause. Carry on, Vish.
You done? Good. Right. Having a good time between balls.
One
such occasion when the camera zoomed in and showed people enjoying the sun, Adam Gilchrist, who was commentating at the time, pointed out that one of the young swimmers was actually his son.
Oh.
With the camera focused on the unsuspecting offspring, the cricketing great, Gilchrist hurriedly asked the producers to cut to something else as his son was sitting there, beer in hand, while still being, albeit just days, underage.
Uh-oh.
Unable to cut away before he took a sip, Gilchrist had to pretend as though nothing was out of the order, and only confessed to what had really gone on much, much later.
Oh, no.
I love that.
Cut away! He's only 10 years old! Get that beer out of his hand, mate.
That's not VB.
What's happening between the balls? There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Show at footballramble.com.
Nothing if he's 10. Sorry, go on.
Oh dear, Chelsea beat Burnley 2-0, the first win of the Tuchel era. Tommy Tuke got his first win. Tuke. Burnley just had the one shot in the whole game, which happened in the 94th minute, which means Tuchel becomes the first Chelsea manager to not concede any shots on target in his first two games since big Rafa Benitez. Bodes well, Jim. Bodes very well.
It does. Yeah, he's very, quite spiky in the post-match as well. Like, he just sort of can't be bothered to be there because he's got football nerd stuff to
go
on with.
Right, is it me or has Tuchel, like, got his feet under the desk very firmly and very quickly?
Yes.
Like, he's all in the blue. You hardly see his face. He's talking about... I don't know. It's something I'm utterly intrigued by this and I can't quite put my finger on it.
He looks like he's been there for about a year, which means he'll be sacked within a week, surely. you want to be careful about getting too comfortable too quickly at Chelsea, you know?
Yeah. Fish, have you been surprised? He sort of seems to have sort of booted the door down and put his feet aren't under the desk, they're on the desk.
Yeah, although when you read stuff about Tuchel, like it sounds like between jobs, he's been researching a lot about Chelsea and like kind of looking into how they play and specifically their players. Mm-hmm. And it also sounds like, you know, you talked about him being, you know, a bit fed up in the post-match interview. Apparently he's, you know, probably similar to Guardiola maybe a few years ago. But if you ask him about football and if you ask him about tactics, he will give you the nerdiest, thorough answers you can wish for. And I think he's come into this country having been very wary of the press and thought, well, If I say something out of turn, they might misconstrue it. So maybe, unless they're going to ask me an early football question, which generally you don't do after games. You might ask them midweek, but it's quite hard to in a post-match press conference setting. So he's probably a bit like, right, just get through this and fire through. I think what you know, we might end up, you know, if he starts stitching together a proper run of results, we'll invariably get a big interview with someone who's granted that big interview, and we'll find out a little bit more about him. Mm. But from everything I've seen so far of him kind of off the field and his persona, it seems to match up to a guy who's very, very serious. Bear in mind, he left football quite early because he wanted to be a coach. Who wants to be a coach instead of
a
footballer?
That's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it was due, he retired to injury, did he not?
Yeah, but like a nerd injury, probably.
Do I ask me to define nerd injury, or are we going to go back to... No, OK. What about, though, putting in Marcos Alonso, and obviously Azpilicueta scored as well, but putting in Marcos Alonso, is that a dig to Lampard, Jim?
Well, possibly. I don't think it's a dig to Lampard. I think that would be a very, very unusual set of priorities for Thomas Tuchel to arrive at the club with. Mm. Like, I'm going to bury your legend. Because the rumour is that Alonso was one of the players that was unhappy with Lampard because he was leaving him out and sort of was kind of trying to undermine him.
Football's so petty, isn't it?
It is so petty.
It's so petty.
Well, it was that business. He was subbed at half-time against West Brom and went straight to the bus to watch the game rather than into the stands. But that was in September.
That is the mindset of a pathetic man, isn't it? Well, it's like a kid who's throwing a strop while out shopping. Like, I'm going to go wait in the car.
I mean, it's poor from Alonso, obviously, but... You do wonder the way he played. I mean, that obviously that kind of goal, you know, you don't expect that from him every week. But he is a goal threat.
He's got that in it. Yeah, he's
a goal threat. And you think with Chelsea, like, he's such an experienced player and he's been such a crucial player for them over the years. I don't want to talk about Lampard too much, but it shows you that perhaps he didn't manage that situation very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I suppose that if somebody reacts like that, they can't just be given a free pass, but also freezing them out forevermore is perhaps a bit unwise as well. And I think Tuchel rotated a lot, hasn't he, in the two games he's been in charge. So he's clearly getting a look at the players in his squad. And Alonso's a great example of someone who's given him a lot to think about there. So, you know, that competition for places between him and Ben Chilwell will surely be better than Ben Chilwell being able to be complacent. I'm not saying he has been, but, you know, that the potential for that has been removed there. So... It seems a bit more just
coherent,
elite.
Well, elite is perhaps the word, actually. I mean, you look at the, you know, what they were highlighting on Match of the Davish with the way Chelsea were playing, and they were really kind of pushing players up against Burnley because, well, as the stats suggest, they weren't going to get too much going the other way. But the way he used Callum Hudson-Odoi was interesting and very effective.
Mm. Yeah, I really admire coaches who are able to look at a player and look at their gifts and do so, I suppose, you know, without their judgment being coloured by their position or certainly the position they grew up playing. You know, we saw it a little bit with... I suppose we are seeing it with Pep now in the way that he's deployed. He deployed Kevin De Bruyne before he got injured, and then what we're seeing now with Gundogan as well, obviously famously. The one that sticks in my mind is... moving Philipp Lahm from fullback to defensive midfield. Mm. And Tuchel is clearly one of those managers who can strip a player down and think, well, I think you'll be very good at this position. And it's not something we see particularly, you know, certainly past the age of 18, per se. And you know, I think it's interesting that it's something that he saw in Hudson-Odoi because I don't know about you, and I'm purely talking about my own ignorance here, but the only time, the moment I realised Hudson-Odoi was a serious player was the Bayern Munich interest. Up until that point, I knew he was, you know, talented and doing bits for the England age groups. But it was only then that I thought, okay, shit, there's something. There's really is something here. Mm. And I think we're kind of seeing that in the way that he's been more malleable in the first two games of Tuchel's era. So I'm quite excited to see his development, to be honest. Yeah.
Robbie Brady certainly knows about Callum Hudson-Odoi's talent, doesn't he? Poor guy. There was a great moment, wasn't there, when Dye shouted, "Robbie, tune in!" And Brady said, "I know where he is, I just can't stop him. What do you want me to do?" Love that.
I love that. That's brilliant. So much going on there. It's proper Sunday league, isn't it?
It is.
But it also gives you a little insight into the Burnley squad and the way they speak to each other and the way the comfort within them.
Yeah.
That Robbie Brady feels like he can say that to his manager and that be and that not even be that unreasonable.
And Dice to just go,
fair enough.
I've got no response to that, really, I suppose. But also, what do you think if you're Callum Hudson-Odoi and you hear that? You just think,
I know.
Thanks very much.
Maybe that's why he played so well. He was like, you know what? I've got a free pass here. I can do whatever I like.
Yeah.
I just run faster.
Dice was very relaxed post-match, wasn't he? He just sort of said, you know, the quality they have. No, best team won. Move on. Yeah. Don't care. That's it.
But that's the way to be, though, isn't it? You can't dwell on a defeat like that if you're the manager of Burnley going to Chelsea. It's just, you know, it's daft to do so. But back to Callum Hudson-Odoi, if we may briefly touch on him again, like I was surprised to learn that he's still only 20.
Yeah,
I feel like he's been 20 for a couple of years. because you know he has been spoken about a bit, and we've only seen him in sort of fits and starts. I'm sure you know regular watchers of Chelsea will have more of an insight into what he brings. But I still feel like we don't see enough of him as neutrals excited for his development. And if he plays like that every week, obviously he'll be a nailed on starter.
Yeah, it's good because I was starting to get really worried about England's reserves at right back. So it's nice to have another one. Yeah.
Or right wing back, as the case may be.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I wonder what it means for Reece James, which is a shame. But
they could both be in the squad for the Euros. I mean, James is a quality player as well. Mm. With Callum Hudson-Odoi sort of laying on chances like that, you would think that Timo Werner's goal drought may sort of end fairly soon, although he has now gone 12 league games without a goal. And Tuchel, I quite enjoyed what Tuchel said. He misses the feeling of scoring. No talks, no hugs, no warm words can make up for this feeling, which is nice. He also said Werner is sensitive about having not scored. And you think, don't say that. People are going to start slagging him off. But he did say, and this is like lost in translation slightly, but you know what it means. Maybe we need a stupid goal, a deflection or whatever, a silly goal that opens it up again.
Yeah, just play off him, off his feet or his chest.
Yeah, a stupid goal. That's what we want.
I don't think that will help, though, will it? Like, because you know, he's if he's that sensitive about it, he doesn't want it to be something that people take the piss out of. So if he does get one off his ass, you know, that's not going to fill him with any joy.
Yeah,
he looks like a very serious man, doesn't he? I think you're right, Vish. I don't think that's going to cut it for him. He won't even count it in his personal tally.
Yeah,
he'll look back on his career and he'll have a set number of goals, but he'll know.
Romario will take it. It's fine.
Yeah, very good. Great win for Leeds away to Leicester City. First time Leicester have lost this season after going ahead, incidentally. And they, you know, they start the game as we've seen them many times. You know, Maddison laying one on for Harvey Barnes. But what a reaction, Vish, from Bielsa's boys.
Yeah, it's incredible, really. You know, when we've looked at, say, you know, Manchester United in that period where they were going behind and winning games, and you thought like, oh, they don't react that badly to going behind because they expect it. And a little bit of the Manchester United stuff was that, oh, you know, we've done it a couple of times, so fine. But with Leeds, because they create so many chances, I think they concede one and they're like, well, we'll get three chances to get this back in the next 20, 25 minutes, so it should be fine. We should say Leicester obviously outshot them on the weekend, but, you know, that a propensity to just create so many chances, I think personally, is the reason that Bamford has been able to maintain some semblance of form while he's not been scoring. So I think this was his first goal in five. Mm-hmm. He laid on the equaliser, but also just his all-round play was just brilliant. And I wonder, you know, we just talked about Timo Werner as someone who's struggling with his goal-scoring form. And it's clear that Werner, you know, he missed that chance on the weekend where he was snatching at it and he kicked it into his own foot. Whereas Bamford seems to have a bit of reassurance that, I'm going to get a couple of clear-cut chances here, so it's on me to do the rest.
Oh, the way he stuffed that one in the top corner was glorious.
Gorgeous.
And then as he sort of dances through a goal, he does, it wasn't quite Guti-esque, but do you know what I mean? It was a lovely assist as well when he could have scored. I mean, enjoyable when he was saying that, you know, he was in his fantasy team, but he was a bit gutted because he took himself off captain. So he could have got more points, Jim. It's lovely when you hear footballers say stuff like that.
Yeah, but he also said that in the post-match on Sky and to the BBC. So I love that he's I love that he's doing the same joke. He's honed his material in a few different interviews, and by that last one, it's really banging. He's got the setup's really efficiently short. There's a topper. It's good. I really like Patrick Bamford. I feel like I want to be mates with him.
Yeah,
and like a lot of footballers seem just like generic footballers, but he seems a good egg. And you're right. What a finish for that goal as well. And as has been noted everywhere, sort of very unselfish for Jack Harrison's goal, which is what you need.
Do you know the one thing I'm so impressed with this Leeds side under Bielsa is that they finished the game with, if you like, an all championship 11. And Bielsa said that when the club decided to build up the squad for this campaign, all the players were conserved because, as he put it, we thought they were up to this level. That's an incredibly brave thing to do, but the way he's getting such a great tune out of them, you compare that to, say, Fulham. Fulham have largely got a different 11 from when they played in the Championship. Decordova Reed's there. And you get one or two others who kind of in and out the side, like Harrison, Reed, and Tom Kearney a little bit and so on. But the defence, the goalkeeper... as I say, Mitrovic has played one or two, but largely you've got at least 9 or 10 players regularly playing each week for Fulham who didn't play in the previous campaign. Now, make what you will of that. But Leeds, as he said, they kept all the players. It shows you how good Bielsa has adapted. And we've often sort of many criticisms about Leeds, and Bielsa in particular, about they've run out of steam and all that kind of stuff. But Fish, the way they've taken to the Premier League, did it surprise you how well they've done?
I mean, yeah, it has, absolutely. Just, you know, what you said is totally true. And I'd encourage people to seek out a video that's been doing the rounds on Twitter, or certainly was doing the rounds a few months ago, of Bielsa. And I don't know who he's managing at the time, but he's giving this talk. And he talks about how certain players have a privilege where they're assumed when they're growing up they're going to be good players. So they work with coaches who try and unlock different things within them to make them better players. But for quote-unquote lesser players, players deemed to not have that kind of quality or potential, they don't get that kind of coaching. So their potential is always untapped. And so Bielsa sees it as his job to be, I suppose, more meritocratic with his coaching methods. So he will take the worst player and the best player and treat them the same and give them the same kind of care and, you know, talk to them in the same way and try and push those buttons and find out what pushes that particular player's buttons rather than just assuming that they're a lost cause. And that is, you know, you see that, as you just said, with that Championship 11. He has ensured that kind of continuity of squad and he's, you know, made them raise their level once more. And it is a real feat of management. And I couldn't give a shit about the goals conceded. It was something that I was worried about at the start of the season, definitely. But it's... yeah, it's one of the reasons people get annoyed about how much we might talk about Bielsa or Bielsa might be lauded, but there is a man there who's doing very good things and probably changing the lives of a few of those players, to be honest, because I don't think any of them would have any thoughts of becoming Premier League players had they not met him.
I think you're absolutely right about that. You know, a bit's been made about the way Lampard has brought through some players at Chelsea, and that's fine. That should be mentioned, of course. But, Jim, he has taken these Championship players. Look at Calvin Phillips, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, some may suggest that he should start for England, certainly be in the squad. But again, it was mentioned, or could Bamford maybe get in there? That might be a you know, with some of the forwards England have, might have been not the most ridiculous thing, but it's probably unlikely. But look at the way we now talk about these players. We don't when we talk about they finish with an all championship 11, you think but the likes of Dallas and Harrison, you think of these as Premier League players now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of that though is down to Bielsa, isn't it? And the cohesion that he's got within them. And it'd be interesting to see what happens if for whatever reason he were to leave within a couple of seasons, how that would stand up. You know, is it just because he's such a unique manager who brings a philosophy and an execution of that philosophy in a way that we know is very, very detailed, very effective, very, very committed? Is it just that he's, you know, he's managed to get his blueprint to take hold at Leeds and to work? Is he getting sort of more out of these players than anyone else would, or are they just naturally sort of actually kind of an exceptional group of players for the level that they were at. And I think it's probably more towards the latter, to be honest. There's a lot of players in there that would not struggle in other Premier League teams. And the fact that they've got Bielsa gelling them together with that philosophy, and the fact that he is okay with them conceding goals in certain games if it means that they score a lot in others, it's just created this really brilliant thing to behold. There's such a sort of like plus of the Premier League this season. They're a real jewel in the crown of the neutral.
Completely. You're spot on. And I think it's interesting that for Bielsa, he's sort of put down roots in Leeds. Because if you think about it,
surprising.
He has just gone from certain teams. He was Lazio. He was there for about 10 minutes, wasn't he?
It's already his longest serving position, isn't it?
Is that right? So, it shows you that he's enjoying this. Maybe it's the players are all getting on board with what he's doing. He's shaping his side. I mean, or is it just because he really, really loves Calvin Phillips? Because according to Patrick Bamford, Marcelo said if his daughters were to marry a footballer or someone at Leeds, he'd pick Calvin.
Have you seen the...
I love daughters.
Both of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you in the Leeds documentary on Amazon Prime, Calvin Phillips comes off like an absolute joy. Such a lovely man. I might, you know, I think I'm very lucky to have my partner, but I think she can do a lot better. And I might actually say, you know what, there's a bloke called Calvin up north, genuinely, because Bielsa, his manager, he's already sharking his own daughters out. I reckon if you go up there, have a good crack.
Yeah.
Have a good crack.
I speak on behalf of the Ramble Nation when saying that she hit the jackpot with you, mate. Come on. But we should point out, by the way, that Bielsa, I think he managed Argentina slightly longer than Leeds. But in terms of the club, right. Jim, I think that's what we're going. I find it funny he managed Argentina. I remember
that
him
does
very
seem
much.
Strange.
I remember him very much at Chile, but I don't quite remember Argentina that much. But then that is all my fault, ladies and gentlemen. Before we finish, speaking of South America, let's go to Brazil. Obviously, congratulations to Palmeiras. They won the Copa Libertadores with a 99th minute winner, I think it was. It was a bit mad at the end, but that's what we expect from that tournament. So the all-Brazilian final went to them. But it was another victorious Brazilian side that I think are worthy of a mention. Chapo Coenza, we remember them because of the plane crash. Of course, very, very tragic indeed. The club captain, Alan Ruschel, was one of the six survivors on that plane crash in 2016 that killed 19 of his teammates, which is absolutely tragic. I think we all remember that. Well, they just lifted the Serie B title in Brazil. They needed to win by two goals to win the league. They won 3-1 after they scored a Penenka penalty in the 96th minute. So obviously it doesn't, you know, make up for what happened, for cry out loud. Nobody would suggest that for a moment. But bearing in mind, you know, they were relegated from Brazil's top flight in 2019 because, of course, the squad and the team were decimated and so on. But marvellous to see them win the Serie B title in such circumstances.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful, you know, story, really, isn't it? It's just the emotion in his face as he lifted that trophy as well was absolutely unbelievable. And you know, as you say, Marcus, it's always there's always going to be a hint of tragedy around it because of the circumstances and a kind of poignancy. But it was beautiful that moment happened at all.
Yeah, no, completely agree. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Before we go, a quick reminder that we've got loads of brand new bonus content on our Patreon page. For as little as $5 a month, you can support The Ramble and get loads more from us lot. So just head over to patreon.com/footballramble, where there is a lot of fun and frolicking going on. So there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to The Football Ramble. It's been an absolute pleasure. On tomorrow's show, Kate, Pete and Andy will be in your ears. So enjoy that. Tomoz. Thank you very much, Jim Campbell.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Fatoosh and Hantaraja.
Thank you, and I hope you settle down for the rest of the day.
Thank you very much, Jiz Hornkamp, and we will see you very, very soon. Ta-ta.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.